The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Talking Bottom. This week it's Bottom Live 3, Hooligans Island. I'm Paul Tanter.
I'm Matt Brooks.
And I'm Ange Pearson.
What? It's Johnson, isn't it?
Are you someone new?
No, I've changed my surname recently.
Recently? Oh, you must have got married very recently then.
Not that recently. Finally given into it.
You got married before the first episode of the podcast had come out, hadn't you?
No.
Well, you were getting married, that's right.
Yeah, I was getting married.
Right, so retroactively...
It's four letters that have changed, it's not a big deal.
But you have ruined series 1 to 3 of our podcast, though, is what you're telling us.
I'm sure lots of people listening are going to be gutted.
Okay, well, you understand it's the same person but different name.
Did you go on honeymoon to the Marveloso Splendido Hotelo?
I didn't. They were fully booked.
A full hotel.
couldn't get the bridal suite. But yeah, I did have Bottom as my wedding dance.
I remember I saw the video from that, yeah.
Actually had it spliced in to have the Bottom theme tune, and then I didn't actually get hit with a frying pan, but it was a frying pan.
That's funny.
You're saving that for the divorce. This week, it's Bottom Live 3, Hooligans Island, recorded at Bristol Hippodrome in 1997, 2 years after Live 2 and Series 3 was on TV in 95. This is 2 years before Guess That's Paradiso, so it's sandwiched between them. I'm going to read the synopsis from IMDb rather than Wikipedia, helpfully written by Vladimir on there, who writes... Filmed in Bristol during their 97 stage tour, Adrian Edmondson and Rick Mayall again adopt their characters of Eddie and Richie from the television series Bottom, this time being stranded on a desert island with no food, and even worse, no booze or pornography to keep them occupied. Things get even worse during the second act when they discover that a French visitor has left a large nuclear device on the island during the night to conduct weapons testing in the Pacific. One for once rather than Wikipedia. Now, in my opinion, the quality of the live shows has always gone in the same sequence that they are numbered in, that the first one is best, second one is the second best, third one.
You phrase that really awkwardly, but yeah.
I would contend that 2 is slightly better than 1, but otherwise I agree. Yeah.
Now, Matt, I know that in previous discussions you've said that you've thought that 3 is the best one.
Oh, no, I kind of switched between 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. Retroactively, going back and watching this, I think I'm just kind of overwhelmed and impressed by the new location.
Well,
the potential of that.
It's so impressive when they first revealed that set, isn't it? Like, see, when you first watched it, it was like, absolutely.
I love the idea. You know, I heard something, a writer say something like, if you're writing something and all of the story has been wrapped up by the end of it, you're writing a film. But if it's the location and the situation you're writing about and what you're attracted to, that's a TV series.
Right.
I felt this is kind of an idea for a new Bottom series, and it sort of was, wasn't it?
They actually had it booked in, didn't they? And then Aid pulled out.
This is the show that formed the basis of what they were going to do as a fourth series, but they did this show in 1997, and the fourth series wasn't commissioned, or indeed Rick and Aid didn't sit down and start writing it until 2012. Aid did an interview with BBC Essex shortly afterwards when he said that ultimately the reason why I didn't want to do it is just because there's other things I want to do. I think he said something like, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should, and when you're older you want to spend things doing that you enjoy. Rick did an interview on, I think I read this on the website Den of Geek, where he was talking to someone and said, basically, we suggested that, or it got proposed as a title to the BBC and they just grabbed it, but we were probably going to change it. It probably wasn't going to stay like that. But then, interestingly, when we spoke to Ed By, he said that this was going to be the setup for it and they were going to have a sort of sideways set, weren't they? Because the island had undergone a hurricane or a typhoon or something.
Everything was going to be like blown over.
Everything was going to be a sort of acute angles, and he was wondering how the hell are we going to do this. So this became the basis of, or at least the genesis of, what would have been the fourth series, but not for another 15 years. I do wonder if when they wrote this in 97, or if they wrote it in 96, a year before they did the show, were they thinking this could be another series? Were they specifically thinking this could be a stage show? Or were they thinking this could be the film that eventually they went on to make with Guesthouse Paradiso?
Well, I would say definitely could be a stage show. Definitely.
That's why it was. Yeah.
No, you know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think the idea for it becoming a series must have happened a bit later. I think they were probably planning another live show. Obviously, the fourth series didn't get commissioned when you would have expected it to. And then years later, when they did presumably get together, they must have thought, well, why don't we put them back on the island? Because that worked really well.
They brought them back up to the island on Bottom Life 4 as well, didn't they? Which I found disappointing when the curtain came up. Like, oh, it's what? Okay.
Yeah.
Like 1 and 2, it does have some semblance of plot to drive it forward, but I kind of feel like, especially when you consider there's 5 live shows, this is the halfway point in their live shows between anything evolving a plot and them just mucking about on stage, pretending to mess up and throwing in as many double entendres as possible. But I know if I'd been in the audience, I would have fucking loved it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, with any of the live shows, actually being there carries you through it, whether there's a plot or not, because you're enjoying watching Rick and Aid live. Like,
you can see they are enjoying it as well. They're having fun. A lot of times doing little silly dances and playing up to the audience consistently.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not many performers get the chance to go out on tour and have that wave of adoration from the moment they step on stage until the moment they, like, do the curtain call. And no matter what they're doing, really. Like, obviously, you're saying that Hooligans obviously is a step down from 1 and 2, which I would agree with, but the quality of the writing is still there in a lot of this show.
Right. I would say, yes, it's a step down from 1 and 2, but only because 1 and 2 are so good, the yardstick has already been set so high.
No, I agree, yeah.
If you, and this is a testament to Rick and Ada's performers, if you stripped out all the arsing around from this one, you'd probably end up with something about 45 minutes long. So it's a testament to them as performers that they can get 100 minutes on stage out of their personalities and the love of the characters.
Mm-hmm. It's a running gag, isn't it, for all of the live shows? Oh, there's a plot this year and stuff, but I think this is the first year when there wasn't a plot.
Well, they're quite literally sort of keeping us all adrift, aren't they, for the first sort of half. We don't quite know why they're there.
It's like obviously 40 minutes before they say why they're there.
We know that it's, you know, they must have been shipwrecked in some way because they're on an island in the middle of a tropical, like, you know, we don't know. I'm going to find out where they are, do we? Obviously, it's somewhere in the Pacific.
It's never specifically named, is it? Or, you know, they never say we were on course from this place to this place. We just know they were on a boat. They were on a ship.
Got to be close enough for Japan to have built a bunker, like, have an underground bunker there.
Aid references Tora 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 at some point. We're assuming it's a Japanese Pacific island somewhere.
Yeah, that's why the bunker's there and everything. Mm. Is Tora 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 what they shouted at the end of Pearl Harbor?
Tora 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 is a film about the attack on Pearl Harbor. I don't know whether they shout it, but
I think it might be the victory. I don't know, but it might be the victory exclamation.
So the
curtain comes up. What are your first thoughts of their set? I love it. I think it's got loads of odd charm and character. It looks naff, but in a way that Richie building a home on an island would look naff. You know, when we saying naff, I don't mean the set looks shit.
I think it's a great set. Yeah. And you know that Rick and I designed it, right?
Yes, yeah, I saw it in the credit. Yeah.
On IMDb, they're both credited as the production designers. But it's brilliant. Well,
writing it, you'd have to, wouldn't you? You'd have to know exactly where was, you know, certain things were going to be placed. And obviously when, you know, the organ comes up and all that kind of stuff, you'd have to have thought through how the set's going to work.
Mm. But it does look, it doesn't look cheap.
No.
You know, whereas in 1 and 2, the flat set has always looked good. And then in 2, the prison set looked a bit shit, presumably because it had to be something that could be assembled quickly. Mm-hmm. In this one, you look at it, looks very expensive, lush and detailed. You know?
It's cartoony, like a seaside postcard a bit, doesn't it? Well, I suppose this is the first time we've ever seen them in a different situation to the flat and them being themselves. This kind of feels like a spin-off to Bond.
Yeah, for the full story, and obviously their costumes have completely changed.
Absolutely. It's the first time. Yeah. Well, no, we've had other costumes, I suppose, but it's complete redesign of both of them. Can we talk about both of their individual costumes?
I will say this is the first time, although they've left Hammersmith before to go to the hotel to Wimbledon Common, it's the first time we've ever seen them definitely out of the UK. So this sort of feels like the spin-off, you know, the sitcom spin-off where they're on holiday.
Yeah.
The costumes, Eddie is in a sort of typical British guy abroad with his vest, his Dave Lister Hawaiian shirt over the top. If you look at, there's an episode of Red Dwarf where Dave Lister wears the same shirt.
Mm-hmm. He's got the hanky on his head in the second act as well. Not the first act, I think. That is Seaside Postcard. Yeah. Well, my brain hurts.
Mr. Gumby.
Gumby from Python.
Yeah.
But Richie's costume, I wasn't sure. I looked up Gilligan's Island because obviously the pun is Hooligan's Island is a spin on the 60s sitcom Gilligan's Island. Expecting to see Gilligan dressed in white. Sort of yeah. But I don't know
what, hat on,
has he stolen the captain's outfit from the cruise ship?
I mean,
that's what it strikes me as.
He's stolen the cap, obviously.
Covered in blood.
But I wondered.
Well, yeah, that's true. Not the one that he was wearing while he cut him in half.
Would it not be more?
Or has he just stolen something from the ship? I suppose.
I don't know. Like, if he'd stolen the captain's uniform, you'd expect him to be wearing the sort of the thing
like
with
all in one white. Sort of overall.
No,
thing,
no,
isn't
no,
it,
it's not. No, it's white trousers, white shirt, but then
are
he's got
separate?
Braces. No, no, yeah, they are okay. Separate. He's got braces on.
When
he's
that thing's up his back, it looks like it's all in white.
Yeah,
it must be just because of the black. Yeah.
The black goes okay. From one layer of clothing to the other. Right. He's still got the tie pin and the tie on for no one. No one's seeing him. It's brilliant. That's so his character, isn't it? And like the hammock has a Union Jack flag there, so it's still British
on a desert island.
I will just say that if his costume is based on something that we're missing because we were born in a certain period, please don't email to have a go at us for not getting older references. We just haven't seen the thing that it's based on.
Well, but please do email us and tell us, but be friendly. I guess I think giving Richie a hat works really well because his hat comes off every time he gets punched.
Right.
I think it's literally every single time it just makes that punch a bit more sold, I suppose.
Yeah.
You see Rick having to kind of pick it up a lot.
Always.
This was Rick with dyed blonde hair, wasn't it?
Yeah, now, so that, I thought it's because of the sun on the desert island. That's why I thought that kind of makes sense. Eddie's hair isn't there, so
Rick's gone kind of sun-kissed.
Now, I can't remember if he did this specifically for a film or TV role or something like that. I know that during Four Men in a Car, the comic strip presents a film that was done in 98.
Yeah.
He had bleached blonde hair in that. But I wondered if there was a reason why he had it in this, or just because he fancied
the
it.
The head of Mavis Davis, he's got blonde hair as well.
He does, yeah.
Yes, he does, yeah.
Well, maybe he was just dyeing his hair at that point.
Maybe.
He was going grey, perhaps. I don't know. And he'd gone for that kind of blonder. Yeah.
Well, it fits. Tone. It makes sense that he'd have blonde hair on the beach.
It's not off-putting. Yeah, you're right. It's the hat addition is nice. There's nothing about their costumes that you think, oh no, this looks silly or anything like that. It kind of feels fitting.
Believable for their character, isn't it? The Eddie would be very much right. Let's make the best of this.
Yeah.
And he's sneaking drinks the whole time there. So he's basically treating it like he's on holiday. String vest as well, which is strobes with that camera, if you notice. It's horrid.
Oh, right. No,
and you can see his fucking mic pack clear as day through the string vest.
Very much a traditional, I say traditional, there's been two before this, bottom live opening of Richie off stage making noises of some sort of grunting variety.
Toilet humour opens it, doesn't it? It's not a fart this time, but it is him straining to go to the loo, isn't it?
Yes, but then he shits himself, right? In that, because there's a half explosion that it comes out with, and I wasn't sure the first time, is that a burnt charred thing, or is that poo up his back? But then Eddie does say, do you know what, that shit up your back, so it is meant to be poo.
Actually, that's a point. The stain up his back is almost
jet black,
isn't it? It looks like ash.
It should be brown.
It's burnt shit, I suppose.
Yeah, it should be...
what it's meant to be.
It should be browner and streakier and more kind of around the based around the arse, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a scorch mark is what it looks like, but obviously they wanted it perhaps to look a bit more like shit, but then in the practicalities of it, they couldn't quite do it, don't they?
I think it's like one-upping yourself, isn't it? Like, Richie, you've shit yourself. Okay, you've shit your pants. Oh, okay, shit up your back. That's, imagine that's quite a bit worse.
That kind of gives you the impression that someone had the squits and then fell down in it while they were doing it, you know?
Yeah. Or like been in a onesie or something or a scuba outfit or something. You made like that.
And again, Rick's voice is absolutely fucked already, isn't it?
Because he's been 10 weeks on tour. Yeah.
Like, I don't know how far into the tour they actually filmed it.
Oh, they were a while into it, weren't
they?
They
say 10 weeks. Yeah, 10 weeks into the tour, just because the cameras are on. He makes light of Richie doing the Eddie impression, doesn't he?
As well as his offstage voiceover start, which is a very bottom live thing to start with, we kind of get the greatest hits in the first 60 seconds, don't we? A lot of Richieisms, hints of gayness, desire of violence towards Eddie, you know, who he thinks is in the hammock, and we find out isn't. And then Eddie makes such a fantastic entrance.
Yes. That
weird Tarzan thing, that's not his voice, is it? I think that actually is Tarzan.
It is the Tarzan call, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, quite impressive kind of physical work from Aid, really, to come. I mean, it's very panto, isn't it? To come swinging in, and Richie hasn't seen him, and he's behind you kind of
it's
thing.
Literally that he's behind you thing, isn't it? What? Where is it?
But then it's all saved by that kick to the face that he gives to Rick.
The complete lack of the logic behind that is completely non-existent, isn't it? It's like he kicks him, he's like leg up, like bosh right to him, and then say, oh, I was going to say, look out. Obviously, you weren't ready. You're a liar.
Well, like, there's some new types of violence in this one, but it feels like this one has less violence than the previous live shows.
I feel like they're getting a bit old now, and they do look a little bit older now.
That was my
wonder. It seems a bit less physical in the fight scenes. You're right. Like, I think they're not as like physically demanding.
I feel mean saying that, but well, the thing that struck me more than them being old is that how much fun they look like they're having on this one. This one looked more of a laugh, I think.
Do you feel like at this point they've gone, you know what, I just don't give a fuck anymore?
Maybe a little bit, because the story is non-existent.
Yeah, they know that the audience are going to come and absolutely lap up whatever they give to them.
Yeah.
And the writing is still there. Like, you know, they say, what is it that's like, oh, you know, is it not just a string of knob gags this year? What a shame. But there's always so much more to everything they do. I wanted to go back just slightly. You know, the cheetah reference, is that from Tarzan?
Maybe.
Tarzan and Cheetah. I think so, yeah.
It's cheetah. Like, thanks for last night, Cheetah.
Well, I think Tarzan had a sort
of... That is
a monkey called Cheetah, wasn't it?
No, it was a cheetah, wasn't it?
Was it a cheetah? Okay.
I assumed it was,
and it's one of his animals, because they say it's hairy or whatever. Yeah.
I think it was his pet sidekick, yeah.
But the writing in it, I mean, when it goes to the whole quick feel-up of life and the shag of life and all that, like, it's so dirty and it's so, like, oh, you know, hashtag me too or whatever now. But, it's just so utterly Richie,
well,
isn't it?
Richie thinks he's just killed a woman, and his first reaction is that he wants to shag her.
Still warm. Yeah. I'm on it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone through that with the gas man and lots of other things in previous incarnations in Bottom, haven't they? But, like, this does seem extra specially pervy.
Yeah, but does he come across, like, really sweet, or am I naive? There's something like really endearing, like, oh yeah, okay, go for it, mate.
I guess because
you just know he's not really a dead woman.
He doesn't sound particularly romantic about it.
No, he's like treating it like a meal, isn't he? Like, oh, yum yum.
When he says skull crushed in sleepy, like, it's graphic. It is quite graphic in the description.
Did Richie's ooh hee hoo hee hoo remind you of Flash Heart? In series 4 of Blackadder?
Not really, only the Drambuie bit.
Right, the way he went hoo hee hoo hee hoo, Flashheart does that to Rowan Atkinson's Blackadder. I think it's when Blackadder says something, will you sod off and die, or something like that, and that's Flashheart's reaction. I can't remember what the specific line is. Is the line, does the Pope shit in the woods, is that a repetition of a line in the series?
Isn't it in the Wimbledon Common episode?
Maybe.
No, is the Pope Jewish, is what they say.
Ah, that's it.
There's a Pope joke.
Yeah. Is the Pope Jewish? Does the Pope shit in the woods?
Is the Pope Catholic? Is the actual saying?
Yeah. But yeah, the obscene noises of when he is kissing/slash groping.
He's not kissing, he's like digesting, isn't it? But then there's like, he's coughing and spluttering, which I imagine is on feathers.
And then he realises that, you know, it's the reveal that it's an albatross, which is, again, like, they've mentioned love albatross in the past, but it does feel Python. It feels like a nod to Python, isn't it?
Albatross is a funny... name for a bird, isn't it?
He calls Eddie a wank biscuit.
There's a few great ones.
Is that before or after Father Ted's arse biscuits?
They reference Father Ted in this, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, one question about it, which is this a reference to that army thing of...
Rugby game, I always thought, but yeah, it's army as well. Wet biscuit.
Wank on a biscuit and someone has to eat it, whoever comes last or something.
That's right, yeah.
I've never played it.
Last person to come has to eat it, yeah, apparently.
So basically, is that an actual thing that happens?
Well, apparently so. It's like an urban legend type thing.
I've never been in the army and I've never been to public school, so I wouldn't
know. You have eaten a wank.
But I always thought, even as a child, when I was told about this, as a little child.
A child?
So the person who comes last loses.
Yeah, even
but
though
doesn't
that's
that
good.
Mean they're the best in bed? Doesn't it mean they've got the best staying power? Shouldn't they be rewarded for this, I remember thinking.
Yeah.
But no, your reward is the biscuit.
Your premature ejaculation, finally, it's paid off.
But the thing is, it must be so hard to come when you're standing around a circle... With all your friends, please come before my mates do. Please.
I don't want to make eye contact. I don't want to look at their knobs. Where the hell do I look for some kind of stimulation?
At the ceiling, I suppose.
If I look at the sky, maybe I'll see a cloud in a particularly saucy formation.
But Wank Biscuit, I do think, is a reference to the game Wet Biscuit.
Right.
You think? Okay. Because, like, now on social media, there's lots of sort of like people making up names for swear words that are just like, you know, cockwomble. Yeah. And, well, Wank Biscuit sort of sounds like one of them, but. I think arse biscuit and wank biscuit, like, they kind of, they do work. You know, they're not...
like an arse buttock or something at one point.
Oh, possibly. Weird. Two of the best combinations of words that I ever heard were in the day-to-day, which was the... Oh, it might be the day-to-day or it might have been Brass Eye, which was fuck nuts and arse candles.
Nice. So, yeah, getting more creative with swear words. I mean, that was in the thick of it and everything as well. Like, you're right. Yeah. Like, Armando Iannucci is definitely a master at coming up with, like, different things. And obviously, if it is funny, it's great. But I don't know, I feel like now it's gone too far.
Yeah.
Just making up words when just... stick to cunt. It's
what swear word can we put in front of a random noun?
Yeah. I gotta say, I encourage this. I think it's,
you like the creativity of it.
I might a friend who went to Italy for a while, and she was American, and she was so impressed by the vocabulary of the swearing. It's like, oh, here, like, and in America and England, we're like, oh, damn it, bastard and stuff. But they'll say, like, oh fucking right. The knee.
Right,
like, huh?
Yeah.
What? This, yeah.
Some, they're creative.
Yeah,
the
creativity with it.
Yeah.
Really refreshing, yeah. My biggest point with this show, with this one, I say, is I remembered it really, really fondly. Plot-wise, it was weaker than I remember, but there's some brilliant dialogue. There's some really good back and forths.
That was what I was interested to find out, whether or not, if you guys had previously looked upon this fondly, whether or not the rewatch had changed that view of it. I was watching it going, yeah, I still think third is the third best one behind the first two.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but it's not the best.
No, you know? And again, I'm sure a lot of listeners out there will be not agreeing with that. They will think that Hooligan Zionist is the best out of all of them. And I do love the playfulness of it, and I love the situation, and I love how creative it is. Like, they've tried something new, haven't they, with Hooligans Island, and it does work. There isn't much of a plot. The only thing that it lets itself down with, I think, is just repeating the sort of, like, oh, there's going to be a bomb and there's going to be an explosion at the end. And it's creative, again, because it's a French bomb, so there's lots of opportunities to, you know, write some wonderfully xenophobic lines about the French, which obviously English people definitely lap up.
I know this is going forward, but from the moment you see the bomb on stage, you know exactly how the show is going to end, don't you?
Yeah, suppose you do. Yes.
Especially if you've seen the first two. Well, let me think. The first two ended with an explosion, and now there's a bomb on stage. Mm-hmm. How is this one going
to
end?
And again, I think that's it. Just does demonstrate that they obviously sat down to write it. They just want to have a laugh. They're going on tour. They know what the audience are expecting, and so they're going to give it to them.
Yeah.
That's doing their job.
And then being the set designers as well, that's making me think that they would have completely designed moments and what, for want of a better word, plot points around the props,
well,
around seagulls, around the obviously on purpose mistimed fireworks and stuff. And that's clearly part of the gag.
I have to say, I think the fluffs in this one are some of the best.
Right. Now, again, I wanted to ask you guys about this, because this also goes back to something that we asked Ed Bye about, who, of course, did the recording of this particular video. Rick and Aid directed the show themselves, and as Ed said, he just basically went in and covered the filming of it over a couple of nights in Bristol. Rick and Aid obviously deliberately made things like the sharks and seagull shit so they could make jokes about them. But then there's a lot of fluffs in this, and Ed said to us that some people came and saw several nights and they said, oh, you know, they messed up in the same part last night as well.
How naive.
I don't think there's any part of this that's a fluff, that's a genuine fluff. I think it's all scripted.
I think there's one bit when he trips over the line saying after the sharks, and he fluffs the line, and then he fluffs it again, and the third time he's like, it's not worth the wait, because the line actually is quite funny, because it's basically, we can't go into shark infested water, basically, but what he's saying, we trip over a bit of wire. It's basically, so it's
funny that
breaking
he trips over
the fourth wall
in terms of his words.
Yeah,
isn't it?
But, so that bit, therefore, the payoff isn't.
But is actually, would they have written, let's have me slip over it, and then I can say the joke isn't worth the wait, and then I do a bad joke, because then actually I've paid off the joke isn't worth the wait, possibly.
Maybe.
But yeah, definitely, I think the whole door not closing thing, I think that's part of it. Because when Rick turns to reference the door, he turns so much. It's the theatrical turn.
Yeah.
It's part of the show, isn't it?
And Rick's kind of hiding his laughter, and it's very well sold. Yeah. Like, it does look like he's genuinely kind of corpsing. He could easily be acting that. You know, because he's kind of hiding his face a lot, isn't he, with it?
And then forget how much of a good actor he is,
don't
you? And just him laughing and pretending to be in hysterics is something he could definitely do.
Yeah. You know, it's fun, isn't it, to watch it in aid scene? Nope, I'm going to get us out of this, and, you know, like pretending he's got amnesia and all that. Like, and it is just a bit of fun, because it's not much of a plot reveal in the second half anyway, is it?
It's not, no.
If Richie then finds out that it's the bunker, like, what can we fuck up? What can be believable as a fuck up, and what's going to be really delight the crowd?
A lot of this is them pretending to fuck up in scripted parts where they're supposed to do it, and a lot of it is them sort of kind of playing to the audience. I don't want to say mugging, but there's Richie's bit where he does the look and says, "What's this? This is me not rising to the bait." It reminded me of Ricky Gervais as the genie in Extras. Oh, yeah. You know, the ooh, you know.
Oh, yeah, something. But I mean, Rick's so much better than that.
No,
yeah,
I know.
But yeah, this,
I know what you mean.
I would argue that the reason Rick is acting like this is because he's been on a desert island for 3 years and his mania is gone unchecked.
So you think it's the character overacting and mugging rather than the actor?
You know, a little bit. It's the sort of thing of... Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you're right. Like, they will have gone a bit loopy, even more loopy than they
it's
already
like
were.
How horny Richie is normally, and now he's not even seen a woman for 3 years, and he hasn't seen a porn mag for 3 years. He's going to be overplaying things, being his childish self, really cracking onto Eddie a few times isn't he?
Yes, absolutely.
What does 3 years on an island do to the sanity of a man who is already clinically insane?
And can you, this is, I can't think of a better example of hell for Eddie.
Well, this is the thing. They have previously talked about, you know, the fantasy of being marooned on a desert island and
yes,
being
have.
In a tropical paradise. And isn't it, you know, the true irony that they're actually there, but they're still lonely, they're still bored, they're still depending on only each other.
Right.
Yeah.
So things that make a fantasy of being on a desert island for them would be birds, lots of wobbly knockers on the place.
And there aren't any.
And a lot of booze.
Now, there is a lot of booze.
Eddie secretly got but Richie doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, that's well funny.
That's why Eddie seems so... He does actually seem quite calm, doesn't he? But then,
he's
drunk.
Going on holiday for him, isn't
he? Well, did you actually calculate how many bottles of sake he would have been drinking a day?
Did you do that?
I thought it might be a quiz question. Okay. Is it?
There is a sake based quiz question, but I hadn't divided it by the amount of time they'd been there.
Well,
fucking
this is
hell.
How much I'm, you know, Saki's trying to think through
Japanese,
what the hell you're going to ask. Okay. In a quiz. But yeah,
sake basically Japanese.
Sake, it's a Japanese drink. Okay. Yeah,
I think it's officially called. Well, it's what they call rice wine, isn't it? It's sort of a bit like sherry, basically.
Yeah. Rice wine. Rice is available to the Japanese, isn't it? So that's what they use, like the vodka potato thing for the Russians. Yeah,
sure.
He would have had to have been drinking 365.2 bottles a day.
Nice.
That's what it works out for 3 years.
He's got like the arm thing. He holds one arm up. Sort of
he always does that, doesn't he?
I think it's meant to be kind of blocking the view.
I think
view
it's so he's hiding it. Yeah.
I think
the idea is that you're sort of obscuring from the side.
I think he's referencing something that we don't know.
I know
maybe.
He does that in the episode where the baby is dropped on, you know, the Christmas episode.
Yeah,
But have I seen any other characters doing that in any other sitcoms? Maybe. Does that look familiar from anyone else?
It does,
doing it?
Yeah. It seems like a thing where you'd be drinking but hiding it from someone who's on the other side.
I think he's overdoing it for the comedic value of that.
Usually in these shows, there's a lot of double entendres, and in this one there is. But in this one, they almost go kind of meta, don't they? In that Eddie denies having done them, doesn't he?
Yes,
whereas
exactly.
They're sending Richie into a frenzy, you know?
It's like he's gaslighting Richie, isn't he? Like, I didn't say that. What do you mean? It's very good. It's like years in the making, isn't it?
He
after
is
so many
to
of
send
them.
Send him mad,
yes.
Yeah.
I just didn't understand what you meant. No, you were deliberately accusing me of masturbating into your food or something, isn't it? Now, do you think that if Richie and Eddie didn't have the cartoon level healing powers that they have, how long would it be until one was murdered by the other on this desert island?
So,
do you know what I mean?
Well, either in the show or on the live shows, someone should do it. I know that on YouTube there are these videos where people go through films like Die Hard and Home Alone and work out like how many hematomas and broken bones and things and how many times they would die. I wonder
what,
how many times
wonderful people they are.
Yeah, but like they're instantly with this one, the moment that Eddie smacks Richie in the face with the shovel, that's probably death.
Shoveling him as well, because it's one he hits him with a shovel and then like digs into his face.
Yeah. Which works really well until...
It's a wobbly shovel.
I'll forgive that. But I think that the hitting in the face with it really works. But then once he's on the ground, you can see that there's no contact with it. It looks a bit weak. That needed another camera angle, you know?
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
In my opinion.
Because it's not Eddie asleep, it's the albatross. But that would have killed him if it was Eddie, wouldn't it? And he's like, wake up with a hammer. There's so many lines in this I just remember... Like rewinding and watching again as a kid, laughing and like the first one, I've killed him, fantastic. Like a burst belly laugh at that bit.
I also love that I'd have been sleeping with the Brigadier's cock right at my house.
Richie's like secret homosexuality just comes once
out.
Again.
Oh, it's not a secret in this one. He's just kind of... I think it's like prison where he wants human...
Well, yeah, I mean, he describes being like bitten on the end of the knob by a fly as like a blowjob.
Yeah, it's my first blowjob. Well,
the Brigadier's cock up the arseline is sold by the whole him, oh shit, I've just realised what I've said out loud. Yeah, yeah. Oh no, the audience has heard me, isn't it?
Yeah. It makes me think of Doctor Who as well when I hear the Brigadier.
Really? Well, the head of unit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
This one has some great sound effects, in my opinion. Richie shitting himself is going back to classic bottom, splashy, splashy.
Well, like the build up to it, the percolating stomach first.
Right.
That's
right.
Good. Yeah. Isn't it? And then, it's a heavy, it's not a little bit of pooing, is it?
But then it's great when it's like, you're all right in there. Like, yeah, fine.
Yeah. What did you think of the vomit spray effect?
So I will say that I think it works in this, but it's definitely a sort of precursor to what happens in the film, which I do not like.
Okay.
So I also think that, oh my, you don't remember the puking?
I've seen the film
Okay, we'll get there next time. But I think it works. And the only thing now is obviously watching it, having seen Little Britain.
Exactly.
And all that, like that was done to not many laughs at all from me. But now, this does actually make me laugh. It's just the joyful way in which he does it. Like he's playing with the puking. And then when he's pretending to do it to the crowd.
You can see him pick up the little squirty thing, which is fine. I don't mind that. And it's clearly not vomit. Some sort of compressed water spray thing.
Exactly. It's a bit of a hark back to the slop bucket from two with all the fart stuff, isn't it? Like it's just a kind of next step up.
The stuff in number two is all gas based, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now this one differs from Guesthouse Paradiso or Little Britain or The Inbetweeners. In those things, what you have there is very physical. It's very physical,
and
visceral, something with substance.
And it's with green and horrible, and it ends up on people.
Yeah. With this stage show, presumably because they've got the stage they need to be on for the rest of it, they don't be slipping around and stuff. What Rick is using here almost looks like a CFC based spray, which I think is why. And you know, if you pick up deodorant and you hold the thing down for like more than 10 seconds,
dissipates.
The liquid stops coming and you're getting the gas.
Short bursts.
And that's why he's doing ba 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 ba. That's why you don't get any more sprays longer than about 2 or 3 seconds because it starts to fizzle out. Okay. But I think it must have been a practical thing of, look, if we have a load of liquid coming out of this, we're going to be slipping around for the rest of the first half. So we can't have that. So I think that must have been a practical thing as much as anything else.
Yeah, they kind of make it a bit of a plot point as well that he's vomiting, that they then use that to
fight off the cannibals.
Right.
All
described off stage, nice and cheap.
Yeah, it leads to something, doesn't it? Like, there's a reason for it. It's not just gratuitous, like horrible, kind of gross. I mean, if he was like puking all over Eddie or something, like, I don't know, it would probably be a step too far.
They use it to fight off the cannibals who they haven't noticed despite living on the island for the last 3 years, right?
Yes.
Who have just been over the brow of that hill they've not been over.
So, yeah. And haven't eaten them yet.
Yeah. But Keith Floyd's there as well, which is good.
I like that Pink Floyd gag.
I think, funny.
Yeah. For anyone who didn't get the reference, that's the famously alcoholic, now dead chef, Keith Floyd.
Yeah, Keith Floyd was, he was very sort of famous in the 90s, wasn't he, at this point?
He was. He was sort of the BBC's darling celebrity chef, I think.
Yeah.
Floyd on Fire is a gag on his show, was Floyd on Food on the BBC. So I believe that was the pun on that. Yeah. Look, quite a few vaguely racist impressions from Eddie in this one of Japanese people going flucking hell and things like that, and sort of squinting up his eyes, and at one point doing like the teeth thing as well.
Yeah, which is again in character as Eddie. You sort of, you know, we've had it before, haven't we, with the slanty-eyed fiend, etc.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie is a racist.
Back in the
respect.
90s, still? Was it 97, you said?
This one.
Yeah, so back in the 90s, and he's on a desert island with no one around, so I feel he could be as racist as he likes.
But it's in character as Eddie.
Yeah.
It's not ideal, but it's in, you know... That's why it's there in the script, I would say.
Also, one that this one has that I think the previous two didn't lean on was Rick and Aid must have gone in the writing, right, what modern references can we just kind of shoehorn in? So you've got the Father Ted, which we talked about, but things like Iranu Uvava, the Shooting Stars
Nick
reference.
Bob,
yeah, that seems dated as hell, doesn't it?
But in 97.
It's huge, wasn't
it? Was very much of its time. So at the time, it's like, oh, I get that, that's on TV.
Yeah.
Father Ted, that's big.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of it, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Or there's more noticeable than previous. previous ones. It's kind of like the Scary Movie films. So the first Scary Movie was a great spoof of horror films.
Scream, mainly.
And I Know What You Did Last Summer and all those 90s horror films. Then after that, all they really did with the Scary Movies and the Not Another Teen Movie and all those things was, rather than actually doing a clever spoof of it, they just went, we're just going to reference it and have our characters dressed as the people. And people would go, oh, look, they're referencing that show that I like. But there was never anything, there was never a comment on it.
Yeah.
And in some ways, they're doing the same thing here of like, oh, we're just going to do a Father Ted impression or reference Vic and Bob's catchphrases, but we won't do anything about them. The nearest you get to any kind of criticism is talking about Frank Skinner, but just saying he's got a terrible chat show, you know.
Which was untrue.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his chat show, yeah.
Well, I suppose he's saying I secretly enjoyed it, isn't he? So maybe. Again, it's kind of putting in like references that the crowd are hopefully going to like identify with. I mean, he's reading out something, isn't he, with the Uvavu thing. So he's meant to be reading out a different language and that's where they slip it in.
Yeah.
So it kind of works. But then, obviously, the impression of Chris Evans and that's the repeat and all that. Like that is just having like a lot of fun. The Tina Turner impression by Rick.
That's still funny, isn't it?
Funny, yeah. But again, like, is it okay now?
Well, why not?
Yeah.
It's all stamping about, like, the I wish he is. It's
hard to look at it through the woke audience's eyes, though, and think that someone wouldn't think that was anything
racist at all.
I hope it's just an impression of how she danced.
I thought it's just like a mess on stage.
It's not like in Psychoville with the doing me Tina thing.
Yeah.
That also makes me crack up.
I do like how they tease. They use the convention of the audience are savvy about things. When Aid, and again it's scripted, but when Aid says, oh, should we skip this bit? And Rick goes, no, go and stand on your mark.
Yeah.
Everyone knows, oh, he's about to get shat on, isn't he?
Well, that's much funnier, isn't it? He just stood there and got shit on you.
Waiting like, for it, yeah.
No, it's again, where it's purposely built up for Aid to be like, oh, you know, why have I got to do this bit? I mean, they've written it in.
Yeah.
He's got a real muggy face on again. It's like the custardy bit. And he just pulls that face again. Like, I hate it.
Another great bottom universe name in this one, with a muck in it. Can you guys remember who it was, the theatrical impresario?
It's a pervy lesbian muck.
Leslie, not Les.
Is it Leslie?
Oh, it was just Leslie, yeah.
Oh, wow, I thought it was lesbian. what is it, muck?
McBlowjob.
McBlowjob,
Sir Pervy. Sir Pervy Leslie McBlowjob.
Yeah.
Theatrical impresario who hires them for their job on the... So we get a bit of backstory of how they ended up on the island. They were hired as a double act who ended up on this sort of cruise ship, I would guess.
They were running from something.
I love this backstory of like...
I want to see that film.
They
love
ecstasy for the first.
Yes, that's right. The whole plot, it kicks off with just a very 90s thing. Let's try ecstasy. You can't reimagine that.
Because you're waiting for how they ended up here, aren't you?
Yeah.
And then just they must have had so much fun. And thinking like, well, how could they have ended up like on a cruise ship? Okay, well, what could they have done? They've ended up at number 10,
right?
After stealing an ambulance.
That's
now,
right.
This does feel like a lot of very 90s references, as you say, because they took ecstasy. They were dancing with Brian Harvey of East 17. Then they ended up at number 10.
Now, Norma Major's Peephole Bra.
Now, 97 was the year that Labour went in and Blair started like inviting pop stars to number 10, and it was all very cool. I don't know if this show was pre-election or post-election, because Norma Major was obviously John Major's wife.
Yeah, so they haven't been in England for 3 years, though, have they, at this point?
Okay.
97,
yeah.
But it's 3 years Excellent on the point. Island, so they're so referencing point. what it was pre-97.
So that means they took the ecstasy in 94, which would be more in keeping with when East 17 were kind of at their pinnacle.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming off the end of the ecstasy craze there. Yeah, okay.
How have they met this guy? They just bumped
into him or something, and then they use some of his costumes as a disguise to get away, and then they kind of ingratiate him.
Well, don't they owe him? And then he's like, well, you can pay it off working on the cruise ship as a double act.
I
owe you a favour. Here's a job. It's odd, isn't it? And they're so reminiscent of the Dangerous Brothers there.
Well, yeah,
act,
I mean,
it?
Where have they suddenly got this great arsehole and Norma?
Oh, fuck me. I laugh so much. The great and the underwhelming Norman. Is what and then,
do you think it's a reference to the great Soprendo? In any way, he was a magician, wasn't he?
I remember him, that big fat guy, Jeffrey Durham, I think his name was.
The great such and such is just
he
quite
was married
a
to Victoria
thing.
Wood, wasn't he? I mean, I suppose it's just the great, and then obviously ourselves.
Their double act is almost Richie and Eddie doing their version of the Dangerous Brothers, but a shit version of the Dangerous Brothers,
sort of a kind of
A cruise ship version.
Well, I want to think of a better term than family friendly, because it's not family friendly, but sort of them trying to do a family friendly act, and just the description of the act, amazing, how funny.
Yeah.
Like him coming out, Eddie naked with a bottle of vodka on his dick. And then
a
some woman
cocktail.
Like a woman stunned with it. And then another bit I burst out laughing at, even in the rewatch, it's like the sword swallowing. You're supposed to swallow the sword yourself.
Yeah.
And it's just skewered some woman who's like, so literally
she
what's
was gagging
happened?
For it.
Yeah. Now she was literally gagging for it, had her mouth wide open. Dapper Laugh's career went completely down the swanny after him making a similar comment.
Right, I love Eddie's fiendish genius plan of a great way to put a fire out on a ship, which is to fill the ship with water.
Filling it with water. Yeah, it's
well,
very
I mean,
similar
know.
Of like help, I'm burning to death.
Yeah.
I'm strapped on a Ferris wheel. It's the same sort of thing, isn't it? I'm burning to death or I'm drowning.
Yeah, and it's that logic of Eddie, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, I need to put the fire out, so I'm going to get water on it. But yeah, it's the classic kind of Dumb and Dumber kind of thing, isn't it? Of like Laurel and Hardy or whatever. And who's the stupid person here?
They come back and go, fixed it, as behind them the water level is slowly rising. Yeah.
Their act is drip fed to us, isn't it, in pieces and stuff. Mm. But if you like put it all together, what actually happens is Eddie comes out naked and stabs a woman. Then they do some sort of weird novelty stuff, and then the captain comes up to try and stop them, and then they just sort of, I imagine, wrestle him to the floor and murder
him.
That doesn't work, and then they're hacking it for a couple of hours. So I'd imagine the audience couldn't get away while this. So they've killed at least two people.
Presumably Eddie's still naked.
There's some lines in this which I'm surprised to find in this one. I just remembered as fondly as bottomisms and stuff.
Yeah.
The bit where Richie's been beaten to a pulp and he's on the floor and then wakes up and says, oh, did I win? That's from this. I got beaten up years ago by three guys. Fought them off or like withstood the beating or whatever.
Yeah.
And then one guy come up to help me and I like had blood everywhere. And I literally said, did I win to him? I was quite important even in that moment. And it's so weird that my first thought, not, oh God, I'm in danger, I could have been killed. It's, ha ha.
Did the guy laugh?
No.
No, I was seriously injured.
No, my nose, like,
that's good that you can look on the bright side. Yeah.
So what takes us into the break is two bad post-production explosions that are comped onto the screen.
I wanted to mention the organ. Yeah, Eddie's organ. I think it's lovely that for the entire series of Bottom, it's only ever used in the flat once when Richie plays on it in contest. And then never in the live shows do they ever touch the organ, do they? And then for the third one, where they haven't got the organ in the flat anymore, they have to produce the fucking organ for Aid to play.
At that point,
did it explode for no reason? Just to get him out the first act.
At that point, when they were writing it, they went, now, I want an excuse to dick around on stage singing and just generally arsing around dancing. Okay, we'll have the organ rising up out of the ground.
Well, that's like a little intermission thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Intermission, like, kind of used to rise from the stage during. So I quite like that it's leading us into the first break.
It almost feels like two episodes of Hooligan's Island, because both ends with an explosion.
Mm.
Well, now, I wondered, because obviously when we watch it on the video, we see two badly comped VFX explosions.
Yeah.
Appearing on screen. Did they do an effect on stage that didn't work very well, and afterwards they went, oh, let's put something bigger on?
They just added to it, I think, because there's also the Compton electricity bit.
Now, the electricity, obviously, you can't do on stage.
Yeah.
So, but you can do an explosion effect on stage.
There's sparks on stage, I think, but then they add on the other explosion.
Okay.
That's the end of Act 1, and let's have a quick word from our sponsor.
That Rick and Aid knew that them sat in deck chairs back after the interval would be the point that people would yell out, have a wank.
Yeah.
Oh, you think they expected it then?
Yeah.
Oh, it's very inaudible, this one, isn't it? This guy goes, is what you hear, followed by a few more, ever wanks.
Whenever they say they're bored or whatever in a live show, you know, or I'm all alone or whatever, it will be have a wank that gets shouted out.
You can have a stagehand to start it off if no one else takes the bait.
But is the have a wank that's yelled in this instance, is it preceded by I'm so bored, or is it just them there sat and there's a moment of silence and so the person feels like this is their moment to yell?
I think it doesn't, Richie, because after the bamboo bit he says that he's bored, doesn't he?
Oh, okay, all right.
I think so.
In that case, he may as well have just said, now's your opportunity to yell, have a wank.
Yeah, because he's just literally sat there almost playing I Spy with himself or whatever, just being like palm trees, whatever, you know, bamboo. Yeah. And then I'm bored.
What I like about the opening of Act 2 is there's the bomb just there in the background. Mm-hmm. So your first thoughts are, what's the bomb doing there?
Yeah, because it's fucking massive.
They don't mention it. Yeah. They don't fucking mention it for a good 20 minutes, half an hour. And then so much so that you've forgotten it's there because it's just part of the background. Then he literally walks into it, somehow not seeing it until that point. Very cleverly done, isn't it? It's odd.
Because it's there. Yeah. It's the elephant in the room kind of thing for the first.
You forget it's there. Yeah. Oh, by the way, what's that bomb doing? The bomb looks like the one from the Young Ones episode. No, it's an episode called Bomb, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
I know the episode. Yeah. I don't remember the
specific... It's just a sort of cheap-looking red bomb.
Right.
They always have to be red, don't they?
Yeah.
So you see it better. Otherwise, bombs. Yeah. Yeah.
Red means danger.
Exactly. Yeah. Le danger.
the nuclear bomber.
Oh, it's in French.
Isn't the Simpsons do a similar thing to that when he's reading The Grill? What the hell is The Grill?
The Grill. What the hell is The Grill? Yeah.
Oh, it's an easy laugh, but it's great, isn't it? And I also do love, because obviously they're facing the audience, aren't they? And then even though it's just like really quite obvious, but when Richie does turn and say, will you stop talking to the fucking fish?
Yeah. I like the fact that we're all fish.
Yeah.
In a weird sort of. I love it. Yeah,
because it sets up the sharks coming across and everything, doesn't it? Like the fourth wall is meant to be the sea that they're looking out to.
It's a bit like when they're standing on the hand of God and Aid turns to the camera, doesn't he, and talks to the audience, and Richie sort of looks out as though, who's he talking to?
Yeah.
There's so many things in here which just seem a little bit of a heightened mania with Richie.
Right.
Some of these things.
Well, unusually.
Just a bit because he has gone a bit more insane and things.
Yeah. So much of this one is carried by their energy and commitment rather than by any actual jokes or plot.
Yeah,
you know?
I think we've said this before, though, with a lot of bottom scripts. Like, if it was any other actors that you were giving it to, it would be very hard to get them to sell it in the same way. Mm. You know, like if it's just literally written down, well, now they're going to do a bit of a manic laugh.
Yeah,
it would not work.
A lot of other actors, if you gave them a script and said, just arse around for 60 seconds, they would die on their arse. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rick Mayo will go, 60 seconds, I want 10 minutes. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
This bottom live, they really, let's say to break the fourth wall, I think the fourth wall was never built.
They want to interact with the frisky fish.
Well, can we say cunt?
Yeah,
it's funny. And then Richie's so happy. Oh, anarchy! I like it when he's on Eddie's side a little bit. You know, it's a thing where Eddie does hate Richie, I think. But Richie, sometimes he says he hates Eddie, but he hates him because he's upset that he's not as fond of him as he is to Eddie. You know, like, he does have a bit of a crush on him. You know, he looks up to him, doesn't he? And then, you're so cool, Eddie. When he's talking about that bird that he picked up, and then he's getting off on the idea of Eddie having sex, isn't he? He's like, oh, what did he say? What did he say? Oh, you're so hard, Eddie. Oh, you're so big. I can feel you in me.
Yeah,
that's really creepy, isn't it? And right at the end, when he's doing this, they were just lonely, just give me a blowjob, take me ruffling from behind. That's after 3 years of desperate, lonely, insanity-induced...
Well, he thinks he's about to die again, doesn't he? We're literally about to die. Let's just, like...
I don't want to be a virgin anymore.
Him speculating on Eddie having sex, and then he sort of merges it into a fantasy of him having sex with Eddie, doesn't it? You know, this is his hidden crush slash the fact that he's in love with Eddie coming to the fore, combining with his gayness.
Is he in love with him, though, or is he just desperate for a shag?
I think both. Yeah.
Because, you know, there's also a lot of Richie kind of like, you know, doing the ooh hoo 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 noises and all that when he gets out the cocktails and, like, he genuinely calls him a puff, doesn't he, and all that. Yeah. Like, but again, protest too much?
He's sort of skipping around with his hand up, like doing the sort of limp-wristed, like, it's what my dad used to do, like, for gay people.
It's very
stereotypical. Like, ooh, all that stuff, yeah. He plays that so charmingly, though. I think it's such a big again, kid.
Yeah, Rick and Aid can sell it, can't they? Like, I think, I mean, I know they do the joke about, like, oh, you know, I wish a younger, slimmer, like, handsomer comedian had said that because it's a shit joke or whatever.
And
like,
to but, take them down a peg.
Yeah, but I think they were the masters at this. And, like, 97, again, they're still in their absolute prime. I know we're saying they're older.
Oh, I think this is they just are after on the their edge. Prime. I think this is after their prime.
They're on, the edge, I think. I think Hooligans Island is probably the last sort of bit of them being in their absolute prime as performers as well. I mean, I don't think they seem that utterly knackered or anything by this show in the same way that when you get to 4 and 5
comes across so clearly.
Yeah, they're loving it. Yeah.
But I say it's not their prime, and it was because the BBC have sort of shunned them by now. You know, like they're just doing the live stuff, and there was quite a while when they weren't on TV. And it just feels to me that some weird politics went on there.
There's a lot of magic still in the bottom universe.
There was a lot to be milked still, yeah.
You know, like they love it. They are enjoying themselves, you can see. And I think, yeah, they've had a couple of years out of it and then they're back, aren't they? And they are absolutely loving milking the audience for all they're worth. And the Bristol gags are great as well, aren't they?
They're always good. Every single time they're in a new place. Yeah.
I personally like the slagging off of Liverpool as well.
Yeah.
When they slagged off Liverpool...
It generally in a city where there is some tensions, aren't there? Which, Bristol, you wouldn't think it's immediately Liverpool, but they're both rival kind of dock
types. Now, that was going to be my question. Yeah. Is Liverpool a rival to Bristol? Because I always thought it was Liverpool and Manchester.
Yeah, it's not as overt as Manchester and Liverpool.
Right, okay.
Like, again, they're probably like, fuck off and steal something or whatever as well, like all that. Like, they played up to that when they were in Liverpool.
I feel it's probably a badge of honour to be slagged off by Richie and Eddie, wasn't it? Be like, that woman's
I would
loving
be
it.
In
like,
Liverpool.
Yes, he called me a cunt.
They mentioned it, yay.
So then in that case, in this one, someone who gets a badge of honour is Angus Deaton, who gets a reference because of autocue.
Well, that's right.
So that was pre the prostitutes.
It was
cocaine,
pre that.
Wasn't it?
Now, what's the autocue thing? Is that a...
Well, he...
On Have I Got News For You, he would have had the autocue.
All his jokes were pre-written on autocue, so...
And was that a... controversy at the time or something then? Why is he bringing that up?
No, I think it's the idea that he doesn't have to remember anything.
Well,
so they've written it in, haven't they? It's like, I could have fucking done with one tonight, you know, with Rick, like, forgetting his line.
There is that, but I wonder if there is a slightly more subtle thing going on here, which is that Angus Deaton, on Have I Got News For You, had lots of great jokes and got lots of great laughs.
But it's written for him.
But it's written for him, he didn't come up with it himself. Now, are they digging at him because Angus Deaton was with Lisa Mayer? So, you know, when the prostitute scandal came out, Lisa Mayer was the one he'd been cheating on with prostitutes.
I had not realised that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
Lisa Mayer's Rick's old girlfriend.
Rick's ex, who was co-creator of The Young Ones with him and Ben Elton.
Yeah, yeah.
And co-writer of it.
I never knew that Angus Deaton was with her. It could be. And obviously, I think he would have been one of the most... sort of salary, you know, high salaried people at the time, wouldn't he? Like, I don't know, like, in terms of like slander, but Rick obviously is now dead, so it's fine. But didn't he leave?
We can say what we want.
Yeah, you can't defame the dead, but didn't he leave Lisa though?
He did, but I believe they must have stayed on good terms. You know,
he'd hope so.
Well, you know, she did a talking head piece on his on Lord of Misrule, so I think they were still on reasonable terms. In the show and in the previous live show, they did their Northern women thing, and I wasn't too keen on it. On this one, when they do their pastiche of 70s and 80s Northern game show host and contestant, I quite enjoy it.
I tell you, I fucking cracked up at the dig at a whole class of people. Yeah. I think it's like got some sad story about a factory, even though that's pretty like underhanded, where you pretend to work, isn't it? So it's all fantasy. So, yes, that's right. It's, gives a fly.
It's sort of the kind of people who used to be on like the Generation Game and Bullseye and that kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, is he doing Jim Bowen?
I'm not sure.
Terry,
who,
isn't it? Like you said,
that's
Terry.
Who I was wondering. Who's Terry? Who's Terry the Game Show?
I wanted to ask you guys if this. You had any idea who
really
he was?
It really worried me for a minute because I thought, well, this is it. He's doing a very northern impression, and then he says, "Now then, now then." And I hope he's not doing Savile.
Well,
but they mentioned Terry, and I wasn't too sure of a big game show host called Terry.
I wonder if they've just made up a generic one here at this point. But
the only other Terry I could think of who's got that kind of mank accent was Terry Christian.
This is pre that. It felt like a sort of
90s, isn't it?
No, this feels like a 70s or 80s game show. You know.
Well, I know. But that's the only other Terry that I can think of that's got that kind of Manc northern accent that he is sort of doing. And then Jim Bowen was obviously a little bit... That was Bullseye, which wasn't
Jim Bowen
as high
was a bit
camp.
A bit more gruff,
So anyway, maybe they're just purposefully not doing a specific person.
It's so well observed. Go this way, go that way. No one knows why we do that. We just fucking do. In fact, doing the impression there, it sounds a bit like Jimmy Savile.
That's what I mean. That's what I was worried about. But I thought he'd never hosted a game show, did he?
No.
Just Top of the Pops and Jim Will Fix It, which wasn't so much a game show.
Yeah,
magazine show.
It wasn't so much a game show as a hunting ground for him. If you know which specific northern 70s or 80s comedian or game show host was being spoofed, please email 11mafickingparade@gmail.com. One of the best jokes in this, one of the best written lines in this, I think, is when Eddie's talking about a sound he heard earlier. That's obviously Richie wanking. It's the sounds of hundreds and hundreds of bananas being peeled rapidly.
Yeah.
That is just, 'cause that just puts you in mind of that classic.
Yeah,
your cheek.
It's a great noise, description. Yeah. Like, and then obviously that I was making a fruit salad. Which you don't even put bananas in fruit salad, do you?
You can do.
So you put spunk and a penis in there.
You can do. So there's a bit of plot progression in this, in that they notice the bomb, and we find out about a Frenchman or frogman pun who turned up and left the bomb earlier.
And does everybody know what a frogman is and why they're putting that in there?
I mean, yeah, I assume...
Well, frogmans are the old war, World War Two.
I think it's a military scuba diver.
Yeah, it's the guy with the flippers and the...
So it's a French frogman.
Yeah.
Which is why they're making it. And I love the way it's like, you've paid.
Yeah.
It's just like they're just putting in anything, aren't they? To slag off the French. But I just also want to say I love the bit where Richie... Well, Aide's like pretended to fall asleep, essentially, hasn't he? And it's like, I'm going to think of a grain of sand and you'll have to guess which one it is.
Yeah,
and
so that's like I Spy, but much more boring. Are you thinking of that one? No, I think of that.
Yeah. From the inventor of Put a Bit of Sellotape on the Fridge comes a brand new game.
I love that. And just the way Rick's, again, you know, give him 60 seconds and he'll play up, you know, just patting himself on the back.
Around that time when they're talking about all of the things they could be missing, and this is like, yeah, there's a couple of them. There's a clothes show special on how to find the right bra.
That's it.
Kilroy on a striptease addiction, all these fantasies. Why don't you just fantasize watching a porn? It's still such a mundane framing device that they have. Their imagination can't
really what they have on the telly and find porn in that.
You forget, because of how freely porn is available now, that just porn wasn't really a thing back then. Like, you'd have like the adult channel and stuff that's showing nudity, so it wouldn't have full penetration at all.
Did they have that even then?
Well, I mean...
Like adult channels on terrestrial? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you'd have the
old terrestrial. No,
we got Channel 5, didn't we?
On Sky.
Was it 97 we got Channel 5?
97 or 98. I can't remember. One of those.
They had some, softcore porn, topless darts on live TV. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So that's the sort of thing that... that's very much a child's way of seeing nudity, wasn't it? You couldn't get the real stuff. You'd have to take what you could get, and that they're very much children, aren't
you? Have
they?
To take what you could get from
as a kid,
from the bush behind a bus shelter,
like just cheap, like, oh, someone's going to be in their bra in this segment. Already done a clothes show special on faulty bikinis, haven't they?
It's weird.
Like, the clothes show's long gone, isn't it?
Oh god, yeah, that's long gone, along with things like Holiday and then the name of the year, you know, Holiday 82 and Holiday 94.
What's Gogglebox
with Gloria Hunniford?
No, sorry. What's Telly Addicts? It makes me think of Gogglebox. There was no
telly game show.
Yeah.
You had to know a lot about telly.
Okay.
It was presented by Noel Edmonds. Yes. You had two teams who were often families or knew each other. I really enjoyed Telly Addicts.
I wanted to go on.
Yeah, like, because like they would play a clip from a TV show, and then you get questions about the clip or the TV show and whatever, and you get general questions about TV, and there's never really been anything like it since.
It must have been a ball game, wasn't it? Must have been.
It was a bit like if you ever catch Mastermind now, you sit there and wait patiently through their specialised things and go, get to the general knowledge, because then I might have a chance for
unless the specialist subject comes up that is something you know about.
You know, I'm thinking...
Very rare.
No one's ever done bottom on
that. I loved it. That probably would be mine.
I'm thinking of applying and just seeing if, like...
Would you do it between the years? You know, would you narrow it down?
Well, there's only three series, so I'd be like the series and not the live shows.
You'd do all of it?
Yeah.
What? And the live shows or not?
No.
You've got to come on.
No, no, because they want to keep it... No. I do the TV...
The more narrow you go...
The TV...
The more likely you are going to get a high score.
I do the TV series bottom.
My specialty is one episode of bottom, only the first half.
Let's go very niche. I would like to do it on one line from one episode.
I'd like to know what they tell them. You know, what is the limit of how narrow a sort of scope you can go? Because some people do ridiculous things that like are so broad.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, you've got no chance, mate.
I think I saw one with their Monty Python as their
Well, did you watch AIDS one, which was a while ago now?
Oh, God.
The clip was on again. It was on the Sex Pistols, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
No. I think. Yeah. And he got a really, really, really high score on that and the general knowledge.
So they find the bar, Richie gets in there, and then we get another repetition from a joke that's in the background of one of the episodes, which is Edie's bra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've never heard that joke before, but we've seen it. Okay. Yeah.
Eddie's still not learned to spell his own name.
Yeah.
Are we to believe now that Eddie has now finished all the booze?
I think that was the last bottle. Yeah,
they're all empty.
That is the very last one. So it's very lucky that he died soon after, because he would have had to be sober with Richie on the island.
Yeah.
But if only they'd thought about this, or Richie had known about it earlier, they could have taken all those empty bottles and lashed them together to fashion some sort of raft.
Well, they mentioned they can't go by the sea because of the sharks. It's why.
They can't swim, but if you get a load of empty bottles, you can make something buoyant out of it.
I think the sharks would still have you off the flimsily made raft.
No. Well, 400,000 bottles, you can make basically an artificial island out of that.
I suppose so. Eddie says the frogman has, he's like, I told him to fuck off with his 3-month supply of food, booze and porn mags. Right? Yeah. 3-month supply of porn mags suggests that you can use up mags by spunking all
over
the place.
You could assume
sticky after a while, right?
Yeah.
I always found that a weird concept that people would always talk about it. Like, oh, this page is a stick together. It's like, why are you coming on it?
Yeah, what?
You don't do that on a laptop, do you? You use a tanky or a tissue or your hand or...
But is the using up also that you've seen it, so you're not going to get the same.
When you were young, you had your like.
Be repetitive.
I mean, possibly, but then like loads of people have got their favourite clips on Pornhub that they go back to. Probably, right.
Yeah,
you know.
You've got your favourite porn stars and things, wouldn't you? Yeah. It's a similar sort of thing. I don't think like you've got your favourite girlfriend that you always go.
You've got your favourite wife.
You're not doing the exact same thing every time, are you?
So Eddie electrocutes Richie, and Richie seems to turn into Kenneth Williams.
Yes, love that impression.
Yeah. He resists the temptation to say matron, but it's definitely a Kenneth Williams impression, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great impression. Better than his impression of Aid from earlier. But even that's
a great impression. I think it is.
No, I wanted to say, his impression of Aid earlier was an impression of Vivian from The Young Ones.
Yeah. Well, it's meant to be Eddie.
Isn't it? Did you notice when they do the Father Ted impression, someone yells, drink! From the audience. It's really quiet, but I noticed it.
Yeah.
Again, they're crowd pleasing, aren't they? How Aid sort of says, can we go back to the script for a moment? Like, do you think it was written in that Richie's going to go into Father Ted stuff? Or do you think he is trying to fuck up Aid because the cameras are rolling?
I always thought he was that when I was younger, but just knowing more about it and what people have said, it seems like it's all.
I don't know. I think there could be a certain amount of when the cameras are rolling that they do occasional little extra bits to try and throw each other off. And that one does seem a little bit like Aid's like, can we fucking... Like, I don't know, it does seem like a bit of a genuine, like, can we stop fucking playing up to the crowd and get back on track? I can see that being a genuine thing rather than scripted in to be off script.
Maybe.
I see your point, Luke. I don't know why. Oh, it's so silly, I find it so charming and funny. It works so well.
Is it that thing of it goes on so long that it goes through badness back into funny again?
Yeah, you see their look on their like, oh no, we're trapped. It's all in their eyes to begin with.
They sell it really, really
In a knob Bermuda Triangle.
Because that's in, I see your points in...
This new skirt rucks up very easily.
Yeah, yes, I see
Ferris
your
wheel. Yeah.
Hole, yeah.
Deliberately terrible fireworks and rockets as the island's coming under attack. But again, that's part of the charm of it, isn't it? It's like the bad seagull and the sharks and that kind of thing. Terrible special effects.
I think Simpsons did a similar gag as well when their rescue gets taken out by the flare.
When they're on the dinghy?
It's the one where the junior campers, when
Flanders, give me the drinking water, my socks feel dirty.
And it's like, they've got the fireworks left over from their act, I suppose.
I'm calling them fireworks, but they're supposed to be rockets, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not distress flares from the bunker or anything, are they? They are actually rockets.
Yeah.
I assumed they were part of their
army weapons,
act.
Right? Oh, I thought they were
weapons. I thought they were from the bunker.
I thought they were left over from the bunker from the war. Yeah. But it's all heading very swiftly towards the traditional bottom live ending, which is an explosion preceded by a recorded voice of Rick doing a French accent saying, I will now explode.
Yeah.
It's Rick, isn't it?
It's definitely Rick.
I think it's Rick, yeah.
Was it his voice for the Le Danger and all that? Or was that someone
else? Well, if it is, it's more French and you don't notice as much, but you definitely hear it on the last line.
Well, I thought, with actually going back, is the squawk Aid? You know, when there's the squawk
or the albatross. The albatross looks so fucking shit, doesn't it? It's why it's funny, though.
Because he did the parrot in number two, didn't he? Yeah. So maybe Aid takes animals and Rick takes prisoners and Frenchman. Bombs. Yeah. So for you guys, any particular high points in this?
Obviously all of the fluffs, but I mean, I do enjoy Rick's giggling fit. It is well scripted in if it is and if it isn't, it doesn't really matter because it is a very joyous moment of them breaking of character and just having a bit of fun. I mean, I know he said there's less violence in this one, but I do like the snooker cues up the, up the shorts and, you know, putting his bollocks back in the right place and everything like that. That's particularly creative, isn't it, in terms of like what they're doing?
It is. It's something new. Yeah. They're not treading old ground with that one. That's something new they've done there, yeah.
The, ooh, knackers bit from like...
it's like a new catchphrase,
that
isn't it?
Is a new one, but it feels so familiar.
Yeah, because he does it twice, I think. He calls back to it.
It just feels like very much like in keeping with something that's happened before, even though it hasn't. Oh, and just the description of how they ended up on the island.
Oh, a standout bit
It's absolutely a standout moment of... Well, I mean, it's not even just a moment, is it? But just the going through all of that, like visual... Again, Rick and Aid at their best, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're women and children only costumes and crossover. That's like, that's premeditated, isn't it? They already had that ready to go. In case it's really sick, we need to have that ready. So standout moments for me, I think, nearly all Richie in this one. I really like the extra layer of insanity that he has. His perviness seems heightened.
I don't know if you can call it a standout moment, but the bit where he's like, he's unconscious and warm and the audience member shouts out, fuck him.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, shall I?
Again, they're clearly wanting that to happen in that moment in the script. But yeah, there's another level of Richie perviness again, which you think in the past you can't top, and they do.
I do think that the more likely scenario of Eddie and Richie on the desert island would be one of them killing the other one. Definitely.
It would a bit have been, more Lord of the Flies kind of thing.
Yeah. It would have been Eddie would have either just snapped and, you know, full on attacked him, or Richie would go the poison route, I feel, and then do a Norman Bates sort of thing with
having
Eddie.
Is that what he's trying to do with the fish?
Around. Maybe.
He's trying to get Aid to eat that, isn't he?
I think what would happen is Eddie would kill Richie by smacking him over the head with a shovel. Richie's body would slowly inflate with the gases as it rots. Then Eddie would use Richie's body as a raft to escape the place.
We've seen
Swiss
Army Boy.
That's a very dark ending.
Swiss Army Boy or Swiss Army Man?
With Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, yeah.
Literally.
I've not seen that, but...
Yeah. God, that is dark, that film. Funny, but dark.
Is that where like he uses it, the corpse keeps farting as well? Yeah. Or is it is. Yeah. Okay.
Basically, it overflows and... comes like buoyant, and but then he's sort of fart powered across the
so basically that film could almost be a sequel to Hooligan's Island if one of them had died. For me, high points, the set is fantastic. It's a great idea to have the maroon. There's some well written gags, but yes, I agree. I think it's Rick Mal's sort of manic energy in this one that kind of carries it through.
I mean, Aid's great as well. Just for balance,
please come and do our show, Aid.
I think this one is just Eddie's kind of got the too cool for school vibe because he's sort of on holiday pissed, and Richie's trying to entertain himself, and that's coming across as mania.
Do you guys think, bearing in mind what Ed Byte told us about how he shot this, in that one and two, the live shows, you keep cutting to the audience. On this one, beyond the first little shot at the beginning as we're pushing over the audience towards the stage, we never see the audience. Do you think that helps the show, that it's shot and covered more like a traditional sitcom and we only hear the audience? Or would you have liked to have seen shots of the audience reacting and that kind of thing?
I think it helps you feel totally immersed in it. You can hear the audience and you know that they're there. And actually, at the end, isn't it a fucking annoying? There's a couple of empty seats.
Yeah, I did notice that. I did wonder whether they'd
maybe
snuck out.
Cunts,
you know, yeah.
That really infuriates me. Yeah.
Did you notice?
They could have died on the way or something.
Did you notice?
We can only hope. Yeah.
The credits at the end, it goes black and then you see the names come on the screen and you still hear the audience clapping and stuff. But then something else happens and you hear another cheer. So they must come out, maybe do another bow or something. You don't see it. That infuriated me.
Yeah.
It could literally just be them waving, but I feel like I've been cheated out on a new bottom bit.
I want to know what happened. Any particular low points for you guys?
I think the fact that they didn't go full Tom Hanks and starve for the role.
Right.
It's very unbelievable that they'd have been there for 3 years and be as sort of... Rubenesque.
Well, yeah. As,
they rotund.
Well, yes. Yeah, Richie should have shit himself Chunky. To death, didn't he? He was like, I love that I've had this shit for 3 years. Yeah. I think it must be very much related. That's, yeah, very good.
Is that how Tom Hanks did it? I don't know. There's not any real niggles in terms of, like, fuck-ups or whatever. I think the only thing for me is that they do just, again, I don't know if you want to call it lazy, but they just build to explosive ending of a bomb going off. And it's not even that impressive in this one, is it? Like, the bomb going off.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a huge, like, amount of special effects that goes with the nuclear blast.
It's almost like a magic trick. You're just kind of wowed by the new set, the new location, that I didn't really notice the lack of plot when I'm watching it. You know, it's just... It makes me think of all old classic double act things, like Lauren Hardy's a really good example, where you can just put those two people anywhere and it's great. It's just the banter back and forth.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see Richie and Eddie do more different schemes, seeing them go on a cruise ship, seeing them being removal men, being burglars, anything like that. But a desert island's a very sitcom-y trope, isn't it? Like comic book thing as well. People often end up on a really small island. It's basically the size of them and a tree.
It's actually a genre, isn't it? Like the whole castaway narrative or whatever.
Yeah.
Neville's Island's one, which I don't know if you saw Aid in that back in 2014. Mm. Like, that's a brilliant play in its own right. Obviously, it's not in any way the same sort of story that happens, but the idea of being marooned and what happens, it's been done, isn't it? Like Robinson Crusoe, I think, is the very first ever.
Robinson Crusoe, Treasure Island.
I've never actually watched, what'd you say, is Gilligan's
Island? Oh, Gilligan's Island, yeah.
Was that a sitcom, was it?
Yes, in the 60s. I think it ran for 3 series.
Right, okay.
I'm not entirely
sure. So would this be something that you reckon Aid and Rick would have watched growing up?
Honestly, I think they...
American thing,
just stole the name.
I think it's mainly because it sounded like Hooligan.
Yeah.
And like, so Hooligan's Island is a great title.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And if you can have a title that feels like it's referencing something, then that's good. I don't think they were trying to ape anything in Gilligan's Island. They just... Hooligan's Island was a good title.
It's just a pun. Yeah. Okay.
Look, there's just so many good little moments here and there, but
what
overall,
niggles have you got,
plot-wise, I guess they could have spent a bit more time on the plot. They make a joke of it, and like, you don't need to have a good plot. And look, people are still there. It's still sold out apart from 2 seats.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, we've said in the past that a simple plot's the best approach, isn't it?
They could have done a little bit more of a plot, I think, just because there's so many good bits of banter between them. I feel it just would have tightened up a little bit more.
To carry that amount of time between just two performers is an impressive feat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I agree.
I really like the anti-jokes and stuff of all their shit. Double act stuff isn't shit. It's fucking well, like the subversion of like the anti-joke of how had her arms cut off. How did she feel? She can't do any hands anymore. Like my dog's got no nose. It's that sort of thing. I think it's just overly charming. The whole thing. I just buy into the concept of it so much. I forgive all of the lack of plot.
We and the audience there in the theatre at the time are happy to have Rick and Abe back on stage doing something new in a new setting. So therefore, we're forgiving of the lacking stuff, the lesser stuff.
Yeah. What about sound effects? Any sound effects that stand out to you guys?
Shitting himself with the splashy, liquidy, horrible. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think AIDS bollocks.
That's my
The dinging and donging.
I think that sound effect was probably figured out or found or something first, and then they wrote a joke around that sound effect. It's just my theory with it. It's such a weird...
Do you mean that brrrr one?
Yeah, that one. The like prolapsing kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, but I mean the bell kind of sounds.
The pop.
And you're talking about the Big Ben bongs,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. But I do also like those ones that you're on about, Matt. Like, there's a lot around AIDS bollocks.
Yeah,
it's the noise when he says you've got the sound man up your trousers, up your pants, and you hear the meh.
Yeah.
It's the same one from Bottom Life 2, the same bar noise when they fall on the sheep, you know?
Right. Yeah,
and interestingly, there is a bit where he throws the shovel, isn't there? I think it's the shovel, or is it the mallet? It's the mallet, I think, and there's the dog. The dog sound effects. Why the fuck are the dogs on the island?
Which gets a round of applause because it's I recognise that from the TV show.
Like the crotch wiggles along with it, don't they? Both of them have a go at that. Yeah, it's the Lamb and Flag dogs, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, it's time for a quiz. This week, I am the quiz master. I'll be asking the questions. Have you guys selected your fart sounds?
Yes, so I've got pinch fart, which sounds like this.
And I've got airy fart, which sounds like this.
Best out of 10. Wait for me to call whoever buzzes in.
We know.
And good luck. Question number 1.
Oh, sorry.
Preemptive.
So this goes to Ange.
That was a reference to Richie pressing the button too early with a bomb.
Nice.
Okay, question number 1. Richie references the Maginot Line. What was the Maginot Line? That's Ange.
That is the line that was built in France to stop the Germans invading during World War II.
Is the right answer.
A line that was built? What, a line
of
people?
It was a physical, no, like a wall. Like, okay. They were actually trying to build a barrier to stop them coming in. And that it's one of my favourite stories in history because they literally got to the point where it was going to like join up. Yeah. But the Nazis just sailed on right through the middle of it.
Oh,
but yeah.
I think it is the Nazis, isn't it? It wasn't First World War, it was Second World War.
It was built in a series of concrete fortifications built in the 30s. And yes, the Germans bypassed it by invading through Belgium.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
They just sailed right through. Anyway.
But yes, that's the right answer. Okay, question number two. Question number two. Richie references the Russian ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev in reference to the tight buttocks. Mm. What killed Rudolf Nureyev? Matt.
Richie.
Is not the right answer.
I don't know, anorexia?
Is not the right answer.
Stabbing the dog?
No, it's AIDS.
Oh, so the other thing that, what?
So no one gets that one.
Who, is that a guy then?
Yes, he was a Russian ballet dancer.
Not that only guys can get AIDS, but...
Yeah.
He
was, at one point he was referred to as the best ballet dancer in the world.
Okay.
How did he get AIDS, from sex or drugs?
You can get it from ballet.
And question number three. At one point, the guys ruminate on five things they could be missing out on back home. These five things are four TV shows and one foodstuff. I want you to name three of these things. Matt.
Okay, so one would be Kilroy, with a special on striptease addiction.
That's one.
Clove show special on how to find the right bra.
That's two.
And...
if you can't name the other one.
And Teddy Addicts is not...
it's not one
not
of the
one,
things.
Is it? Fuck.
I would love to jump in and steal with the other three, but I really can't.
Okay, so no one gets that one. So the other things are an X-Files on disappearing clothes.
The Foxy and Mouldy. Fox Mould is the character who got that wrong.
The Britis Empire.
That's it. That's the joke. We could be missing the Britis Empire. Yes, we have to be thankful.
And the first thing, the food stuff, is baked beans.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's very
so those are five things. Question number four. What three cocktails does Richie offer Eddie? I think Matt pipped that one.
Okay.
I want the exact names.
So there's a slow, comfortable fist up the arse.
That's one.
One of them.
The other two do sound a bit more like regular cocktails.
So it sounds a bit like a Bloody Mary, but it's...
okay.
Oh, well, now that it's got blood in it.
And gin.
Okay. It's, gin, blood, and seawater without the gin.
It's the names I'm after.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
You know what? If you can't, I'm going to throw it over to Ange.
Go on, then.
All right, Ange. And if you can get the other two, then you get the point.
I honestly can't remember.
Okay, so it's a Bloody Mavis.
That's it, right.
And a coconut surprise.
That was it.
And what is the surprise? Coconuts thrown at you or something.
I'm not sure, actually. Okay. Question number five. What is the average user rating for Hooligans Island on IMDb?
Out of five? Or out of ten?
Out of ten. It's been rated 1,329 times. Okay. And it's the average out of ten. You didn't buzz in, did you?
Well,
I thought you did, but I think you must be covering your speaker because it was very quiet.
Well, I had buzzed in and then I was going to say out of ten. I'm going to go with six out of ten.
All right. It's not six. And I'll take it from you and we'll go with whoever gets it the nearest.
Oh, really? I don't know, 7.5.
Ange wins, it's 7.7.
Oh, very good.
Question number six. Keeping with IMDb, what was the name of the user who wrote the synopsis I read at the beginning? I did say their name.
What?
At the beginning of the podcast, I said the name of the person who wrote the synopsis on IMDb.
You think we're listening to you?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Okay.
Is it a bottom-related name?
No, it was Vladimir.
Vladimir.
Oh, you did say Vladimir.
Yeah.
Okay. Fucking hell. The question standard
Brilliant. Is... How far away is Japan from Richie's arsehole? No, go on.
Question number seven. How far into the tour does AID say they are? That's Ange.
10 weeks.
Is the right answer.
That was neck and neck with a fart, but if I,
What song do they sing part of just before their knife throwing act? That's Matt.
Is it Born to be Wild?
Is the right answer. Okay, so that's three to Aaron, one to Matt.
Do you think they need clearance to sing a song on a deserted island?
Only if they're then recording it onto a video and then selling it to the general public. Question number nine. How many empty bottles of sake are there in the bar? That's Ange.
400,000.
Is the right answer. So that's four to Ange. So she's got this one, but we'll do question number 10 anyway. What named as Eddie Cool Richie when they're adopting their 70s game show personas? Matt.
Terry.
Is the right answer. So that's all 10 questions. And the result there is Ange wins with 4-2. Would you like the other questions that I did as bonuses?
Yeah, go on.
For fun. So we have to buzz now.
You don't have to buzz. What was the name of Richie and Eddie's double act aboard the cruise liner?
Ray Arsaw Norman.
Okay. Yeah. And finally, and I left this as a bonus because I know how much you guys like to complain when it's not entirely related to bottom.
Entirely related.
What, like
Vladimir.
The name of the person who's written about me on IMDb?
Okay. My remaining bonus question is, at one point they throw shade at Frank Skinner's chat show that at the time was on the BBC. While he was there, he got in shit for a sketch spoofing an IKEA advert. The basis of this spoof was householders throwing a certain kind of animal out of their windows. What kind of animal?
What? I Frank understood Skinner. All yeah. the words.
Now,
there.
I remember
this. I will have seen it.
Link to fucking hell. Like, what? Okay. Richie and Eddie are both carbon-based life forms.
I remember mainly Frank dancing in his pants. I can't remember.
Okay. Right, then a cat.
No, the answer is chimpanzees. The IKEA ad was chuck out the chintz, and so he did a chuck out the chimps spoof.
I remember chuck out your chimps right. now.
His chuck out the chimps had chimpanzees being flung out of windows, and in one case, one of them being finished off with a baseball bat. It got a lot of complaints.
Of course.
So that was my other bonus question. Now, can you see why I didn't ask that one?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, bloody hell.
So I won.
So Ange,
did I win?
So Ange won that one. That was 4-2. Yeah. I apologise for the questions, but this was a very difficult one to write for.
Did not envy you at all.
Yeah, no, well done.
So that's it. That's another show in the bag. If you have any comments or anything, then please at us on social media, at Talking Bottom, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And of course, you can email us at 11mathkingparade@gmail.com. So what's up next?
Next.
It's going to be Guest House Paradiso.
It's the movie. Hey, finally.
I'll be doing the quiz for that one.
Thanks a lot. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.